LA at Pacifica.org. I am Ross Felzone for In Search of the Truth at WRFN, Pasqua, Tennessee. Thanks for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce the reunion tour of Tinner.
And first of all, I said that really the fundamental question that so therefore I want people to understand that that's what I said, and I said the what you're seeing isn't, in other words, you're saying now. The enemy hit us. They not only killed lives, but they also hurt our economy. It's, you know, one of the hardest parts of my job is to connect Iraq to the war on terror. I believe it. As I told you, Osama bin Laden believes it. But the American people have got to understand that. In other words, if this fails, I'm worried, strongly worried about a world if we lose, you know, and say, well, how come this group of people would use oil to affect our economy? And I truly believe this is the ideological struggle of the 21st century. And we're talking.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides with special co-host Peter Stafford, author and the psychedelic explorator, or something like that. Stay tuned.
Drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out mini- not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on Cops when they tell you to spread your legs. Put your hands on the hood of the car and they pat you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you,
and welcome to another edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Today is September 14th, 2006. It's another one of them Thursday evenings. This is a two-hour show, which I kind of examine a variety of topics, ranging from city council craziness to the drug war to how folks outside are treated to just what's cooking downtown on Pacific Avenue. In the studio with me and carefully reading an article in Rolling Stone, which we're going to be discussing later in the program, is Peter Stafford, who is a researcher.
Hello, Reedy.
And he's also got a microphone over there. We're going to talk to him in a moment. But he's I called him in particularly because of an article I read recently in the Rolling Stone on, let me give the exact name of the actual article, is The Psychedelic Revival. Daniel Pinchbeck and the Psychedelic Revival, an article by Vanessa Grigoriadis, and it's about Psychedelia 2006, what's cooking. And I'm interested in getting a look at the local Santa Cruz scene, as well as getting some sense of how what Peter's take is on this. Peter's written an extensive, book that went through three editions, Psychedelic Encyclopedia?
I've written five or six books on the subject of psychedelics.
Uh-huh.
Most well known is Psychedelics Encyclopedia. The third edition was about 600 pages, and every time I rewrite it, it seems to me the data doubles. So I've decided to rewrite it now as five books. Three of them are out. First one, Psychedelics with an Emphasis on LSD, then Magic Mushrooms, and then one that has to do with a lot of more exotic psychedelics.
What will the last two be about?
Well, Magic Mushrooms is about Amanita muscaria and all of the psilocybin species.
Right, but the last...
Which are about 120 or so by now.
Right, but the last two books that you haven't written, you said you're going to write five books.
Oh, yes. The next one is Marijuana and Hashish. And then I think maybe I'll do one on exotic psychedelics.
But, so sort of the second book on exotic, you said the third book in the series was about exotic psychedelics.
No.
Sorry.
Heavenly Highs, the third book,
mm-hmm.
is about ayahuasca, DMT, Ditran. There are probably about a dozen more iffy psychedelics, but generally of a native botanical understanding.
So these books are currently available in
mm-hmm.
like downtown stores or online?
Yep.
And are they...
Like in the case of the Marijuana and Mushrooms book, I've already written 60 pages, which I think I read it a short while ago. And I thought it was all basically fine, except it was written 20 years ago. And a great deal has happened in the meantime.
So you're updating the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay, well...
But in each case of these psychedelics, I have described... I think there are nine main families of psychedelics.
Mm-hmm.
And in each case, I tried to describe as clearly as I could the history, botany, chemistry, physical effects, mental effects and forms, sources, and preparations of all of these.
Sounds very scientific. Do you ever get into the sociology of use and perhaps any local perspectives on their use? Are you? I mean, we probably want to talk about that. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, and we are going to be talking more with you, Peter, in a minute. I'm just going to kind of try to give my usual rap, which has to do with how you call in, which is at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. You, of course, are tuned to 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. And if you want to check the show later, it's going to be archived at huffsantacruz.org, huffsantacruz.org. Wait a couple days. If you are a caller, be sure to turn down your radio, because otherwise it'll confuse you, because there's a delay. We don't censor what you say, though I may cut you off in a rage or in boredom or in annoyance. But, you know, I definitely will not censor you for your language or your content. I suppose there are some exceptions to that, but hey, I'm usually pretty good about it. I'm trying to focus the show on a number of issues, mainly having to do with low-income people. Peter here is also one of the low-income psychedelic researchers.
They claim that I'm under the poverty level.
Well, in fact, you are also working for the Homeless Garden Project, right?
No longer. I'm working for Grey Bears, which sends out about 2,000 bags of food every week to people who are over 55.
That's me, all right. I get my bag of food this week.
Did you get one?
No, I didn't buy it. Of course, I didn't ask for one.
It's $20 a year.
Right.
And as I say, it's a little over 2,000. I think it's like about 2,200 people they send it out to.
And how can you actually get involved with the Grey Bears and get this bag of food?
They're in the phone book.
Yeah, you call them up in the phone book under Grey Bears.
G-R-E-Y.
Uh-huh. And what do you tell them? I'm over 55.
I would like to have a bag of food a week.
And what kind of food do you get?
Well, it's mainly vegetables and fruit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like 15 or 20 pounds. Now, if you think of, let's just say, 2,000 people, that means for every pound in every bag, that's a ton of food. So if you've got 15 or 20 pounds in each bag, then if you can follow this, that means 15 to 20 tons of food go out each week.
So how many elderly people are we here in Santa Cruz? I mean, you and I are two of them, but how many more are there?
I don't know.
1,000 people?
I don't think I've been expelled from the Boy Scouts yet.
No, well, you know, you should be, that's for sure.
I know. And
Did you abandon the Homeless Garden Project, or did it abandon?
No, they decided after I'd been there about 3 or 4 years that I wasn't supposed to be there more than about 2.
I figured that you were going to kick you out because you hadn't graduated, that sort of thing.
Something like that. Although I talked to the person who did that, and she had been there before me, and she's been there maybe 8 years.
Now, in other words, she's the paid professional that gets paid, whereas
yep.
the homeless people on whose behalf this is being done, it's the showcase.
They get paid.
They don't get paid as much as she does,
I would imagine.
And they don't have the tenure or the power she does.
I don't have any idea what she gets, but they get paid minimum wage.
Right, but she doesn't get paid minimum wage. She gets paid more.
I would imagine.
Who is she, anyway?
Hadari.
Hadari?
Do you know Derry? Derry. I don't have it exactly.
I probably have met Derry, and I think I actually saw the Homeless Garden Project from a train last Friday, but that's another story.
I'm surprised that it hasn't been imitated more. Mm-hmm. It's been going for about 30 years.
Well, the Homeless Garden Project to me has always been something of a sham. They don't provide food for homeless people. They use homeless people as a showcase, providing a small number of low-income jobs that wouldn't even allow you to live in Santa Cruz successfully. They don't provide living quarters for you, right? So you don't even get what seasonal workers get.
Right.
And, you know, they get the benefit of all this hype, how they're helping the homeless, when in fact they don't even provide emergency shelter for 3% of the homeless tonight.
I think they do help everybody who works there.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, but again, it's like they. I'm glad they help the people who work there, but it's also a publicity device for the for the city to come and indicate it's doing some kind of project for the homeless when it's not.
They're not particularly, it's not like a city sponsored activity.
Doesn't get any funding from the city?
I couldn't tell you.
I think they leased the property from the city. There was a big to-do in 1998.
I think they got it from that guy Builder.
When they moved it from Pelton Street to, you know, over to where it is now. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that it's been a showcase project. It was under, I guess it was under the Citizens Committee for the Homeless for a while. But the Citizens Committee for the Homeless got, you know, assistance from the city. And I suspect the Homeless Garden Project does,
they,
too.
They
know?
May well.
I know you. At least we know they discriminate against seniors. That's for damn sure. At least, was it your senior status that kicked you out, or was it the fact
that I'd been there too long.
You've been there too long. You were sucking off the tit of the Homeless Garden Project. Well, weren't you, Peter? Admit it. yes. I know what's going on here.
But before that, before I began working there, I had gone to over 200 places seeking employment. I made a list. And I would go down and say Mission Street, and I would say, yeah, I applied there, applied over there.
What kind of work were you looking for?
Anything.
And you were rejected?
I got one response. It was from Crocker's Lockers, it used to be called.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman said she enjoyed talking to me, and she thought my resume looked great, but had given the job to a guy who had 35 years of experience in the...
And a degree in electrical engineering.
No, right? In the small locker field.
Well, you could always go back to college, and maybe at 85 you could get your degree, or maybe 76. How old are you?
Actually, I'm 67.
Huh.
But I haven't had my midlife crisis unless I failed to notice it.
Indeed. You're still an
adolescent. So I think I'm good for 150.
Well,
I might be a bag of bones by that time.
So we're talking with Peter Stafford, author of the Psychedelic Encyclopedia. And for those who are interested in checking up on this article, you can go to a Rolling Stone online and find it. I Googled instead in order to find this article yesterday by going to, I can find it now, that is.
When I got interested in the matter of psychedelics, there were two books out at that time. This is like late 1950s of last century. And there was Aldous Huxley's The Doors of Perception and Robert Dirop's The Drug Something. About 2 months ago, I just called up Google, that's what you were just mentioning, and asked for books on psychedelics. It claimed there were over 5,000.
In spite of the fact that psychedelics have been illegal in any research for 30 years in virtually every Western country. Right?
But actually, some legality is beginning to creep in.
I want to hear about that. Again, the article we're going to be looking at is Daniel Pinchbeck and the New Psychedelic Elite in the September 7th edition of Rolling Stone. What you do is, if you've got a computer and you're anywhere around one, you just put in Daniel Pinchbeck and the New Psychedelic Elite, and you find the article, and you can actually read it yourself. We'll be talking about it most specifically with reference to Santa Cruz and what's cooking on the psychedelic scene here, if anything. Is it the plaything of burned-out hippies, rich new wave types? What's the deal? The actual Daniel Pinchbeck and the New Psychedelic Elite. Pinchbeck is spelled P as in Peter. Pinch Beck, B as in boy, E-C-K, Pinch Beck, one word, and the New Psychedelic
Elite. He's written quite a number of interesting books. One of them is on inventions, for instance.
And
He's kind of a facile scientific writer who has the inspiration to choose fascinating topics.
Huh. I've never read his stuff, but again... I'm, of course, concerned about the criminalization of drugs in Santa Cruz and, of course, in the United States.
I'm writing this new book about marijuana and hashish. I first became involved in this in 1964 when I went to New York, and there was this group called LEMAR, which stood for Legalized Marijuana. And there were many people who thought it would be legalized by the 70s.
Yeah, most of us had high hopes.
Yes, but I happen to be a great optimist, and I believe it will be legal by the end of this particular century.
Well, maybe our great-grandchildren will be not have to worry about whether a police officer is going to shake them down or find their medication or have to concoct some medical excuse. There is a proposition, as you probably know, on the Santa Cruz ballot this November for so-called tax and regulate measure that will allow for make marijuana, not just medical marijuana, but all marijuana, recreational marijuana, medical marijuana, you name it, the lowest priority for police enforcement if it's used in private by consenting adults. Again, it seems like, you know, we're talking about
indeed, but,
reinventing the square or something. But so anyway,
it is such a milding drug. It's astonishing that such heaviness has come against it.
Isn't it? Mm. And I hate to have to go through the same rap, you know, every 3 weeks when the issue comes up, because to me it doesn't really bear much discussion. What does bear discussion, however, is what's happening that's new on the scene. And I'm going to hope that once you've chugged through this article, you've looked at some of it. And
yes, I have.
We can
talk. But I did want to tell you about it. Did you ever see the little brochure called The Dangers of Not Smoking Marijuana?
I think that was a brochure you handed me at one time.
Oh, actually. I might have. I have.
It sounds like a good brochure. Is it online? Or
I don't know, but the dangers are such things as you forget that you're a freak. This is not smoking marijuana, right?
Yes, yes.
You think the president knows what he's doing. You think that nobody will love you unless you're somebody other than yourself. The writer obviously had a good...
You know, I don't know if I buy this line that marijuana is some kind of miracle, psychological, therapeutic drug, that it's some sort of spiritual guide that will lead you forward.
You'd be surprised.
I think it also can lead you into, you know, into just getting fat, sassy, sleepy, and apathetic, I suppose. You know?
Yes.
So can television, but, you know...
Yeah,
you
but
know.
The it's a matter of taste, I suppose.
Well, I mean, I don't know, it should be a matter of taste, and I guess that's where we agree, that I think there's...
A lot of people like to be sloppy.
People should not have to be arrested for this kind of stuff. I don't know if I agree with...
No, absolutely
not. You know,
not.
The people who talked about these, you know, even psychedelics. I was recently reading an article by a guy called Farber around how psychedelics are a spiritual sacrament. I mean, this is obviously one of the main, you know, channels of both analysis of psychedelic drugs and, of course, use of psychedelic drugs. And I, you know, I like to sound like an expert on the radio, but, of course, I'm far from it, not at all an expert. You probably know, you know, 100 times more than I do about these things.
I've been interested for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, you sure have. And by the way, where can people find your books? We're talking with Peter Stafford.
Oh, in bookstores.
Local psychedelic researcher. And how much is the most recent book?
Well, the third edition of my Psychedelics Encyclopedia, which covers these nine categories in terms, as I said, of history, botany, chemistry, physical effects, mental effects, forms, sources, and preparations.
Right.
That was $35. But now I have noticed that the data has doubled once again because almost 20 years has passed. And so I've been writing it as five books.
As you said. So the question is, where can you find the five books, and how much are they? And
I think they're the three that have come out so far, I think, are $12.95.
And are you, I mean, are these books you've recently written? When was the last one?
Yeah.
The
last one I finished maybe 4 months ago.
And
this new one, I have so much material, it's hard to say. I have a great deal of difficulty in writing anything.
Because?
Well, it was my worst subject in school, for one thing, but...
But you, I've actually, you know, I've seen your psychedelic encyclopedia, and it's kind of voluminous, but I haven't.
But it's very, it's very direct. I've tried to simplify and make the.
Is there anything there that folks can't get online by just, you know, Googling for the Wikipedia or something? That, I mean, is there something you?
If you go to Google, you could get the book that Bonnie Golightly and I wrote, which is called LSD: The Problem Solving Psychedelic. That's all for free.
Yes, I remember that book. That was a fine pocketbook from.
We
the
wrote
60s.
That in '65 or so.
A very optimistic view about the use of LSD.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we try to describe how this action occurs. This is all extremely mysterious. I'm fond of mystery, actually. Mm-hmm. But these substances are unlike almost anything else we know because they encourage creativity, they encourage psychological analysis, encourage all kinds of things. I mean, there are three or four major ways in which they can affect us, and nobody knows how it occurs or what is going to happen if, say, on Thursday, it being, you know, a sunny day, you decide to take a psychedelic.
So
there's
are
this
you, are
risk
you just,
involved that is...
dare I ask you, are you still a regular user of psychedelics?
Oh, as much as I can get them. I recently just gave some people some money to look into certain matters.
And is there still a thriving... we're talking about psychedelics, we're talking about LSD, you're talking about DMT, ayahuasca.
What
are you speaking of?
All of those.
Now, is there...
I know people who are using all of those.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that reminds me that somebody asked his mother, our son, whether he had ever used psychedelics. Now, it is true that I had taken him to almost every psychedelic he's been to more psychedelic conferences than almost anybody else.
Where psychedelics are regularly taken, or were they just discussed as an academic?
Well, mainly discussed.
Uh-huh.
But they were all of congenial takers, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost everybody there was pretty conversant with the matter.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she said, oh, he's taking them all. But I said, I never really encouraged him, except in the sense that...
How old was this person?
This is my son. He's now 29.
How's he doing?
Just fine. He's working for a company that produces medical medications. And the one that he was particularly involved with looking into has about... Somebody noticed that there was a snail, underwater snail, that would squirt something at, say, a small fish. The fish would get paralyzed, the snail would go over and eat it. And when they finally extracted the potent chemical in it, it was about 20 times as strong as morphine. They have just begun releasing this particular medication in Europe.
This is something he discovered? Your son found this? Or
no, he was in charge of checking out its safety matters.
And the point you're making is?
That he has a degree in chemistry.
Oh, and he's doing well as a researcher. And he's
yes, and I expect even more fantastic things from him. But this is for people who have pain, which goes on.
You know, this is a subject. Actually, I've had people on this show talking about the criminalization of pain medications, like heroin, but also like OxyContin. What's the proper phrase?
Yeah.
I'm not getting the pronunciation properly.
No, but you got it right, OxyContin.
And how people are just prosecuted up the yin yang for this, but other people really need it as for pain and.
Yes.
Aren't able to get it.
It's very hard to show people that you actually have pain.
Mm-hmm.
I guess... luckily enough, after it leaves, you forget about it. But to have it
well,
go.
I'm roaming from the subject of this article, which I initially wanted to talk about.
Okay.
Once you had read it, which I don't think you've done yet.
I read what you sent me.
You've read some of it. I gave you the first part of it by email. And we're talking again about Daniel
Pinchbeck
and the new psychedelic elite in the September 6th issue of the Rolling Stone magazine, which has Bob Dylan on the cover. And also can be accessed online if you go to Daniel Pinchbeck and the psychedelic elite
and
check it out.
And it's like I just mentioned Bob Dylan. I think of rock as the rock groups, a sort of a...
I don't want to talk about Bob Dylan. I want to talk about this article.
A multi-layered cake. So at the top, there's the Beatles, the Stones, and Bob Dylan.
Well, you know,
then there are like 20 groups on the second layer. And then there are 170 on the third layer. And
right, but
down.
My interest in having you in the studio is not, to, sort, not to play fluff with
right,
counterculture
that's
stuff.
That's the same thing has happened with psychedelics.
Well, I'm interested
there
in...
There are some people who are, you know, outstanding, like Albert Hoffman, Sasha Shulgin. There are a number of people who have advanced this thing enormously. Then there are maybe 100 people who have written books, given lectures, investigated.
What do you mean, but wait a minute, advanced this thing? What are you talking about?
Oh, about the psychedelic front, I guess you could call it. I'm saying that just as with rock...
You're talking about the use of LSD and DMT and other mm-hmm. psychedelics as, what, healing agents and maybe alcoholism as spiritual agents and coming to understand the world around us and oneself, that sort of thing?
Yeah, that sort of thing.
That sort of thing. Well, I guess...
You
before we go any further,
okay.
Because this is supposed to be a five-minute thing, it's extended to 25 minutes suddenly, and I'm feeling a little freaked out because I'm not in absolute control here, and I need to be. Otherwise, I don't feel good about myself. I want to play a few street interviews, and I'll give you a chance to read what you didn't read in the article, and then I'll probably ask you a number of questions about,
terrific.
Again, from a local perspective, because I want to know what's going on locally. I don't want to, you know, I'm not terribly interested in the history of LSD or the, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, famous researchers here and there, although I don't mind hearing about it, but I want to hear about
I do.
Your experience locally, how prevalent, where are we now? I mean, there's a lot of talk about methadrine and heroin
mm-hmm.
epidemics, and I've talked on the air about marijuana as a, you know, an issue that the city council, headed by Mike Rutkin and Cynthia Matthews, is essentially allowing the police to continue to criminalize and is not really backing in any strong way the right of an individual to use these recreational things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, you know, put LSD in, of course, and DMT and psilocybin are completely out the window. And they're often thrown into prosecutions, as, for example, they were with Roger Mensch, who ran the Emporium up in Felton and who's currently being prosecuted for it.
700,000 marijuana arrests a year for possession.
Where?
In the United States.
No, there are 700,000, you say?
700,000.
Yeah, there are, but there's a much smaller number actually in jail in California now serving sentences. But what concerns me, of course, is the number in Santa Cruz County is the number that really concerns me.
This is basically a harmless thing, and they keep talking about having to build more prisons and so forth. Why not just release the people, say, who've had a first offense of possession? You would empty out about half the jails in this country.
Well, so that I don't think is true. I think that
really?
While there are 700,000 arrests, I think there's a very small number of people actually being held in jail for possession of marijuana.
Mm.
On the other hand, a lot of people lose their driver's licenses, a lot of people get fined, a lot of people suffer loss of federal aid as students. And I don't have any of the stats on this. But I do know that there is, you know, there is an increasing, you know, you see it in the paper last week, you know, plot of marijuana discovered on, you know, such and such a ridge.
And they wrote out where it was being stored overnight in order to, before they were going to burn it all up.
Well, whatever.
And the people who had been robbed of this, you could say, came and took it back.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That sounds great. But I mean,
yeah, they wrote it in the paper.
The point is that the police agencies are getting worse and worse on the issue, not better and better.
Right.
And you get these, you know, sort of symbolic efforts like this recent Proposition K, like which is being pushed tax and regulate for consenting adults, but has no legal force locally. Although, you know, it could lead to a state,
right.
could lead to a statewide initiative next year. Earlier last year, you had the Office of Compassionate Use created by the Santa Cruz City Council, but it's completely defunct until it's okayed by the Supreme Court. I mean, come on, you know, when's that going to happen? You know, next millennium
yeah.
sometime.
So my question
about all this, Peter, is how do we make these changes so that people will come out and. Obviously, I have sort of some prejudices in this. I think people should that the real changes are going to happen through direct action and mass action, and of course, obviously, there are a variety of things. And plus, the work that you and others are doing in researching and publicizing and scientifically documenting injury mm-hmm. or harm that comes from these medications, these
right.
drugs, these sacraments, as some call them.
Do you know the word evil game?
Yeah, I
okay.
But I don't know if I want to talk about it at length
okay,
now.
Okay, but that's the okay. African contribution, and I looked it up on the Internet about a year ago, and at that point there were 19,000 websites devoted to it, and I looked at about 20.
The problem I'm having here is, again, I want to give you a chance to read the article, and we can talk about uh-huh. Ibogaine if you want later at some point.
Yeah, I'm just saying
what
that
it is and so
there's
forth.
This tremendous difference between... almost no knowledge about these various things, and now this tremendous output of information, and whether people decide to make any use of it or not.
Well, yeah, that'd be interesting for me to hear about, because I'm not aware there's been a sudden output of information, mm-hmm. and if there is, I'd like to know when this began to happen, because it certainly isn't really...
Well, it's certainly very involved
with the computer. I guess
it's gotten
into the Rolling Stone. I mean, you know, it made its way into that magazine.
But just the fact that there are 19,000 websites devoted to the matters having to do with Ibogaine, which most Americans never even heard of.
Yeah, Ibogaine being a, what?
A three-day... Pinchbeck wrote a book about breaking open your head. That comes directly from the Ibogaine experiences.
This isn't what a bark of some kind or an herb that produces a psychedelic experience.
It's actually a root that is has
right.
the.
Is it illegal in the United States?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But it's used. As in most of these cases, religiously by, I know a great number of tribes in Africa.
I know that ayahuasca has recently, there was a case that I guess now mm-hmm. allows ayahuasca to come
That's
in,
right.
or there's
to drink the tea.
It's under contention.
The Supreme Court said that
as a religious sacrament. And then there was mm-hmm. this recent
much as
5 or 6 years ago, there was a maybe 10 years ago, there was a bill passed under Republican pressure to expand religious liberties. I guess that they wanted to expand the religious liberties of fundamentalists, but they also expanded religious liberties for Native American churches.
Mm-hmm.
Things of that sort, use of peyote
and things like that.
Right, but on the other hand, you don't see it, being sold in the corner store,
no.
in the religious sacrament. A lot of people who use it are nervous about, and rather secretive.
Right. So, and because the experience is much affected by your expectations and the feelings you have about it all, it doesn't encourage the best results.
Right. A paranoid mindset in the society
right.
is
not
helpful there.
No.
Right. Let's go to the paranoid society, or perhaps the anti-paranoid counter society. We're going to hear a few tapes from the streets while Peter bones up on the
yeah.
Rolling Stones and David Pinchbeck and the psychedelic elite. You can, too. Go to the Rolling Stones website and check it out. You can also call into the show. 427-3772. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned. We have a little dead air here. I apologize, folks. The machines are getting cranky, but I'm not going to let them do it to me, so here we go.
Well, it's September 13th, and the Hudnut Bombskis are a-bouncing and a-trouncing, and there's some weird-looking gruel that's being served. What are you serving today, Hudnut Bombskis?
We got tabbouleh with tomatoes and cabbage. We got applesauce, homemade applesauce, and we got a fresh salad.
And how long did it take you to prepare this?
About maybe like 3 hours.
And if people want to help prepare, what can they do?
Come to Cesar Chavez Co-op at on Wednesday at noon or so.
And where is Cesar Chavez Co-op?
It's on Main Street by the wharf.
And how is it identifiable to those who've never been there?
It's across the street from the hostel. So if you find the hostel, it's like right across. There's Morning Glories and the entrance. And it says co-op on the top of the building.
That should be helpful. Now, do you guys have a website yet or a phone number?
I don't know. We might.
And how many people are did the cooking today?
I think it was like 5 or 6.
And I don't see any political flyers, but it's just a charity meal now.
Yeah, we don't have any agenda or religious affiliation, but we just think food, not bombs. You know, food, no bombs. Food, you know, we don't serve any bombs.
No bombs are served here. Eh?
Yeah, right.
Just bombs.
Yeah, just bombs.
Just bombs. We've been talking with
Brent.
Thank you, Brent.
You're welcome.
Any announcements for youth and cop watchers? Or?
Nope.
No upcoming workshops?
No. Not that I know.
Well, heck. We're talking with
Bam Dula.
And Bam Bam, what brings you back to this neck of the woods with your Canada Athletics T-shirt?
Well, I want to assure everybody, when you travel outside the country, always wear a different T-shirt. Like Canada's a good one. That way, people don't think you're an American and give you
a lot of shit.
A lot of shit for being an American.
Even you've been traveling?
Yeah.
Where to?
Just came back from Seattle. I've been in Sandpoint, Idaho, and Colorado. And
Rainbow Gathering?
Rainbow Gathering, and up to.
I heard a nasty story about some people in Colorado Springs in jail for 6 months because of dumpster diving.
I didn't hear about that, but they gave over 300 tickets out for no permit, which, you know, we don't need permission to be in National Forest. It's our forest.
And what happened with those tickets?
Well, I didn't get one, but I got 3 other tickets for driving onto National Forest land and driving through a 6-foot stream and driving below in the valley under the water table, and I'm going to go and plead insanity and ask if they can give me a life.
Well, I could be your psychiatrist and testify on your behalf. What court is this going to be in?
Oh, that's the federal courthouse in Grand Junction, Colorado.
You're actually going to go all the way back there for this hearing?
Well, if I can send my clone, I might send somebody else. I think I'm going back, but I'm not there yet.
How does Santa Cruz look to you, and how long have you been away now?
I got a mouthful of food.
There you go.
Well, it looks really good. You know, when I left, I remember that there were a whole lot of cops giving a whole lot of hassle to the scene on the mall, and it seemed to have mellowed out. And it's great being back here. I love it.
How long ago did you leave?
That was about 2.5 years ago.
Hey. Wow. No longer you looked a little unfamiliar to me when you first came up there.
Oh, yeah. Well, is it about the same?
Well, keep me advised, and if you have any reports, call into Bathroom Spears Broadsides, my radio show.
Bathroom what?
No, not bathroom. We have no bathroom here, as you may notice.
I know that.
They've removed the porta potty. Probably for fear that someone like you might use it.
I'm telling you. What is your website?
Freak Radio, broadcast at freakradio.org. And you can call in the show, as listeners know, at 427-3772. We have Donna and Sean here.
He's going to get it.
The wayward travelers now ensconced in their
RV.
Mobile home, or what is it? Trailer, tractor?
It's an RV.
RV. Let's move over here where we can actually hear each other. A man who is...
No.
And actually, that's Donna Dice and Shane, who were evicted from their apartment. We talked about that case at some length, and you can read about it on IndieBay.org. Shane is an AIDS person with AIDS, and they're struggling now in a vehicle, and hanging in there. And here's more about that.
Here we are, somewhat more audibly. Donna Dice, you're parading around in a revealing outfit.
Oh,
what is this? Is an attempt to seduce the older men or the younger men?
No, I'm just being a hippie.
Being a hippie and eating some yellow-looking fruit. I'm chewing gum, otherwise I would certainly might pick you up on it. So you wrote a great piece on, the kind of the shock of changing from, 10 or 12 years of housing into living in a vehicle.
Yeah, more like 40 years living in housing.
Hey, man, you try to generate your own wants every day and have to budget out every want that you generate to run the different lights and to run your laptops because we each want to use the internet and stuff like that. And I have to be the one who generates all the power, and dish out all the wants and stuff like that and measure it all out and give you all the time up and be aware of all that crap and charge all the stuff. And it's just a lot.
So you're gonna write something about the electronic side of living in a vehicle. Is there going to be more in this series? Well, I hope there are.
I'm going to write about the side about the living with the partner who constantly has a high demand for constant energy flow, constant internet access,
constant
email, constant writing.
The demand, the domestic bliss in a or something to that effect, or lack thereof. So, anything new? Any reports from?
Yeah, at the parking lot where we park sometimes, the last row that's privately owned in a public parking lot in downtown Santa Cruz, and there was a suit being very angry-looking surveying the area today.
Yeah, we get that.
So we expect something to happen up there.
This is a public or private lot?
It's a public lot, but one row is privately owned.
Oh, yes. I think you actually mentioned that on the air before, or possibly in your description of life in a van, which can be accessed. Have you posted it yet on IndieBay? I haven't heard back from you whether it's okay to post it.
I haven't been on IndieBay for a while. I should write another article, though, there.
Perhaps I can just post the article you already wrote.
The 24-hour fit. Who's this?
Hi, Donna.
Hi, Icy.
And that article I'm actually looking at right now, she sent it to me in an email. Donna Dice, who's a seminal worker who began the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz with Marco in the 90s and was down there helping to fight all kinds of unlawful detainer actions, advising people of their rights, and also actually ferreting out actions that hadn't been announced to the people that were being evicted until such time as the county changed its policies and shut the records to her so she couldn't give out that information. He was evicted about a month ago, essentially after an incident where her partner was brutalized by, according to his account, a Santa Cruz police officer who assaulted him while he was in handcuffs and then never charged him with anything except resisting arrest, which was dropped. This guy was a patient with AIDS, it was happened to, and I'm not aware that the officer ever received any kind of discipline. Of course, we wouldn't be because we're not told about these things. Dick Wilson and Police Chief Scary keep these matters under wraps. Anyway, Donna's story, which I'm going to be posting, I'm going to read a little bit of it here. I've never really been homeless before. Once in the 60s, my best friend and I crashed at a friend's apartment for a week or so. That wasn't really homelessness, was it? In the 70s, I moved out from a boyfriend who moved in a new girlfriend after 3 years, and I slept in a field. A man and his son saw my body wrapped in an old sleeping bag and assumed I was dead, so called the police. This was in Vallejo, a bedroom community at the top of the bay. The officer was uncomfortable, asking if I had any friends or family I could stay with. My boyfriend told me to come back, but I wasn't going to listen to his mouth or criticism, so I declined. They called my work, and a bunch of my coworkers offered a couch for a few weeks. That was kind of fun, so I didn't really consider myself homeless either. Of course, the term really became defined in the 80s when the fast-track eviction laws, which actually I know very little about, and I'm curious as a sort of aside, if anybody has information, maybe I can get Donna on the air to talk about those fast-track eviction laws that came in the 80s. In California, were made law. Occasionally, I'd see someone with long hair and fingernails hiding in a corner of the post office till midnight when they closed. He was afraid to or couldn't speak, so I just said hello and wished him well, trying to make him not be afraid I would call the police. The first bag lady I saw had a huge trash bag full of her stuff in her shopping cart and walked around town all day talking to no one. In San Francisco, it was much worse. Angry men in clothes patched together with dozens of safety pins raged incoherently at the Greyhound bus station. They were gradually pushed out to the street like the regular alcoholic bums, casualties of the mental health system. Living in Santa Cruz with a housing shortage since the earthquake in 1989, regular working people and those with disabilities became homeless more and more. El Nino made it worse, and that's the bad weather in 1997, 98, I believe, El Nino, and our city and county leaders failed to take action when it was appropriate. Siding on the side of tenants was seen as being against bad landlords, so it wasn't seen as inclusive enough to receive funding. Bad landlords include slumlords, greedy landlords, and those who like to brag about the property they own and how much profit they made from it without doing any physical labor. I saw even middle-class professionals evicted when real estate prices jumped up in 1996 through 98. I saw people living in dangerous and unsafe conditions out of necessity, and the Sentinel even printed there were at least 3,000 illegal units in our county. At the same time, local ordinances against sleeping in your car or on public property from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. The actual ordinance is 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m., at least in the city, the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban. These ordinances increased. Many locals wanted to believe the homeless were just out-of-towners until they saw the statistics. Housing prices and sales rose and the homeless increased. Camp Paradise and the Back 40 were noble attempts to alleviate the problem, but eventually our local politicians gave up on rectifying the situation and denied any responsibility for justifying its liberal image insofar as implementing novel temporary housing solutions such as a campground or tent city. Some people believe these people were just bums looking for a free ride and prejudge many that were legally declared disabled. Since August 9th, after a horrendous battle against a millionaire landlord, I and my partner, who has AIDS, Shane, were forced out by the landlord's judgment in his favor due to the 30-day without cause law used in eviction cases. I worked for 25 years, including as a journeyman marine pipe fitter, so had an IRA and was able to buy a 21-foot RV. Who knows how we'll make it to old age, but at my age and my disabilities, as well as Shane's, we could not survive sleeping in the woods or in a shelter where Shane would be subject to hundreds of germs and bacteria his immune system could not fight against. Shane did end up in the hospital a week later with pneumonia and the new antibiotic-resistant MSRA strain of staph infection. We've had a hard time keeping our batteries going so we can stay warm and charge the cell phone and computer. I know we are not really homeless because we have these things, but there are other hardships as well. Being able to retain a home address matters for voting and signing petitions. Many businesses and credit companies will not trust someone who only has a P.O. box. The indignity of asking to use another's address is rude, just as having to seek out a restroom without buying something. It's been hard to stay on the Internet, as many servers are shut down at night even though they have Wi-Fi. Whatever that may be. Sleeping in a shopping center or other private lot sounds like a good idea compared to the street, but first alarm comes around at 5 a.m. to roust people. Who needs the police in their face for sleeping at a normal time just like everyone else at night? Are there any other towns that do this? Even Davenport Landing has at least 20 no parking signs all down where one would like to rest and be able to see or at least hear the ocean. Shane is worried and wants to get a hotel on the first, hopefully with SCAP's help. Santa Cruz AIDS Project's help. He has had to do way too much, what with changing batteries, keeping warm, and redoing the poor wiring. We'll probably need to be indoors before the rains, as I see a few leak marks on the ceiling. We have had two encounters with the police already. Yesterday, some cops questioned Shane as he took our bunny Fluffy out on the mall to try to meet people and get spare change. Since he's not a dog, they couldn't do anything. There's no dogs on the Pacific Avenue, as some of you may know. It's illegal, even if it's on a leash. Unless you're going to the pet store, that exception is made for middle-class people taking their pets to the pet store. Interesting, isn't it? That's the pet store that's kind of right across from Hoffman's Bakery near Cathcart and Pacific. This is all an aside from Donna Dice's letter here. Continuing, since he is not a dog, since Fluffy the Rabbit is not a dog, they couldn't do anything but watch for a new ordinance banning all animals downtown. They are creating an artificial environment there, and it looks like tourists will outnumber the locals at last. Love and peace, Donna Dice. And I'm going to post this on Indie Bay for those who want to read it again, perhaps for the second chapter of this Donna Dice interview. And now a little more of the street before we return to Peter Stafford, who is working his way diligently through the Rolling Stones article on the new psychedelics. So call in if you'd like. Phone number here is 427-3772. Maybe you've had some experiences with landlords or police, or perhaps you have some positive things or informative things to say about this, or perhaps you have some words of hope for us about the city council candidates who will actually do something about this, none of whom I know has, or as far as I know, has mentioned anything about rent control or just protection laws for renters or anything of that sort. But, hey, hope springs eternal.
Yeah.
Old friends hugging here at the farmer's market. Or I should say, at the Food Not Bombs meal.
How are you? Fine, how are you?
Well, we've tuned into a questionable activity here at the farmer's market. Your name, sir?
Jack the Ripper.
And your social security number? For heaven's sake, the man is obviously...
I'm an illegal alien. I don't have a social security number.
What planet do you hail from?
Pluto.
There is no... it's not a planet anymore. Sorry.
Okay, I'll have
you
to
lose.
Change my address to Jupiter.
All right, that's a little better.
I keep forgetting. So,
you have your medical marijuana cards on you, or are you just simply puffing away for the hell of it?
We're using...
I'm puffing away for the hell of it.
And you, sir?
Using his...
sort of a shared card.
He doesn't have one.
No, for heaven's sake. Officer, over here. Any comments on whether you've been hassled for smoking marijuana publicly in the last couple of weeks?
No.
Only by you?
Well, I try to make it a practice.
Oh, okay.
Regular. I'm getting you used to it. Yeah.
But I do have to say, I really like the fact that Santa Cruz's police policy is low grade when it comes to pot, and they are doing a lot about alcohol on the streets.
Low grade, meaning they give you the cheapest, shittiest pot, and then they steal it.
No, meaning they don't give a shit about giving tickets for weed right now.
If
you're being blatant, they'll fucking do it, but they're not looking for it all the time, whereas they're looking for bottles on the streets. And most of the shit that's going down out there is because of the alcohol and other shit.
Just,
not because of weed.
I just try to keep a tweaker between me and the cops, and that way I'm safe.
So you haven't heard anybody whose marijuana has been confiscated?
No, not recently.
Because I know various people who may have that complaint, but
I'm sure it's happening. It really depends on the cop. Certain cops will walk up to you and say, don't do it here, or go to the beach, or go, you know, back when the beach was legal to smoke on, they would say, take it out of the downtown.
Or, you know, where's your car?
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, they've now made smoking anything on the beaches illegal, things like
anything
that.
Anything in the park, illegal, San Lorenzo Park.
Yeah. Actually, you know, the park with the smoking policy is really good for the homeless people because it means the ranger's tied up in the park and not in the Pocono.
There you have it. The bright side of Dinette Shoemaker.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about it.
And, well, how do you feel about it? Call in 427-3772. A friend of yours had an unusual experience the other day. He saw police removing his own marijuana.
Correct. My friend went out to his pot garden on Loma Prieta in time to see the helicopter lifting up the basket of marijuana. My friend worked long, 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 hard hours, invested several thousand dollars, and didn't necessarily, you know, his life was okay, but everything's going to be all right with my friend, but... it was a terrible, terrible loss. Terrible loss.
Now, did you talk to your friend? What was this, a fluke or a snitch that the police found these fields, or was it, you know, inadequate planning? Was it increased war on terror, war on drugs, police surveillance. What's your sense about this?
I don't know. I'm thinking that they were grouped together too closely, and the overhead trees were trimmed out a little too much. That's my feeling. Nobody knew where they were. They were so far out in the middle of nowhere, that, and it's so difficult for even my friend to get to, that I'm surprised that they took the effort to go get them.
Our vigilant sheriffs, these were sheriffs?
Yeah, there's a three-person sheriff team out there working.
The, what is it, the Met team, marijuana eradication team?
I don't know. They were on the newspaper several weeks ago. Anyway, they're doing a good job. That's all I have to say about that. I was really impressed. I guess, my friend will have to find, you know, other things to do. My friend was really going to do some awesome stuff with the money, though. He's going to take his veggie oil bus across the state to schools and teach kids about recycling and drumming and on.
Hopefully the children were saved from that fate.
right. Until next year.
So this is on public land, private land.
It's a large piece of property that nobody knows whose it belongs to. It's an out-of-state owner. Owns several thousand acres out there.
Because I know, were the police bragging about this bus later in the paper?
They were, yeah. We heard about that. And also, it was one of the ones that they were really proud of. Yeah.
How much marijuana was seized that you heard of?
Well, in that spot, 70 plants, which is not a lot comparatively, but that it was up such a difficult butt crack of the mountain to get to, that in the article we read, and I have a friend who's a cousin of one of the officers, they were really proud of that one.
Now, there's been concern about soil erosion and pesticide use. Did your friend take environmental precautions, or was he just spoiling the environment?
No, in this case, and I know that's the case out there. It's a real bummer that that's happening. But my friend was growing organically and packed all the trash out and had no fertilizers or pesticides out there that would damage the environment. Also, there's this word out there that you hear that constantly, that it's the Mexican drug cartels running this thing.
What position did your friend hold in the cartel hierarchy?
My friend is a friend of Mexicans, definitely, but there's no such thing as large-scale Mexican drug cartels growing in the hills of this area, and I don't even believe it's true in any other areas. Imagine that, large Mexican drug cartels in the hills of Humboldt and Mendocino. Everybody knows who's really growing the dope in those areas. They're just doing their same old thing. It's Homeland Security bullshit, war on drugs bullshit. That's my take on it. I don't believe that the Mexican drug cartels are funding these large growing operations. Same as always, it's a bunch of dreddies and, you know, cool people growing pot trying to get ahead in life.
Now, is it true, do you think? I'd heard this said when we were talking about marijuana growing up in Humboldt with Pebbles Trippett, an activist up there with the Ukiah Medical Marijuana Patients Union, that the big growers are to some extent an impediment to tax and regulate type measures that would decriminalize or make it available off the black market because they thrive on the black market. What's your take on that?
Yeah, isn't that, that's a bummer that they can't tax the pot and it can't help fund the war machine. I'm really bummed about that too. If there's any growers out there who can't get to sleep at night because they feel really guilty that their tax dollars aren't funding the war, they can always just take a lump sum and go pay to the IRS and they'd be glad to take it. But
that was skillfully put. However, it evades the question of wouldn't the price of marijuana like drop through the ceiling, I should say through the floor, the basement, if in fact it became legal?
Well, sure it would.
Wouldn't just put a lot of big pot growers, including your friend, out of business.
No, my friend is out of business.
Find an honest living!
But wouldn't that be a perfect world, though, if the government could actually see that marijuana is actually helpful medicinally, at least, and then helpful to, not as harmful as alcohol that's being sold over the counter all the time, really ruining people's lives.
Not like our wine? What is your problem? We'll have no wine.
Well, imagine this scene. Right. If it was decriminalized or or they were able to tax it and have some control over it, yeah, the price would drop. People like my friend wouldn't be able to make a living on it, and he'd be forced to make a living doing something else, which is fine. There's plenty of things out there to do. This is just a loophole that we've been able to find and fund ourselves while fueling this awesome enlightened culture that we have. Yeah, it also, you know, marijuana helps us stop for a second in our tracks, and we get another little different view at society as it is, and see our government for as sick as it is, instead of, you know, helps us fight against the status quo in our own lives and be a little more freaky.
Now, you're a man who's sampled different psychedelics. Would that be fair to say?
Peter, any comments on anything you've heard here?
Well, I'm a man who has sampled a number of psychedelics. I went up to a conference a while ago, and they wanted some writers and some speakers to comment, and they were going to make 5-minute videotapes. So we did 5 minutes, and then they wanted another 5 minutes. And then as we were doing the third 5 minutes, I finally got around to saying, well, you know what I really like to do is run around naked and take all the drugs I possibly can. And there were three people in the room, and they all went, cut, making this arm motion. And I think, I do believe that there was something that came out of that, and I bet that is the pull quote that comes from me.
What about the local situation here around marijuana availability, around drug cartels? You are you know, you've seen the stories about the big busts up in the hills and so mm-hmm. forth. My question, first of all, is are there big drug cartels operating you know about in this county?
Well, apparently there are. It's amazing how many plants they get at various times. It's amazing.
There are or there aren't?
That there are.
So you would disagree then with the person we just heard on tape who said that he doesn't think there are such things as big Mexican drug cartels growing marijuana in the hills.
I wasn't there, so I can't speak from personal experience.
So you've been taken in by the police propaganda, is what you're telling us, perhaps?
No.
Or you have some Mexican friends who've been offering to set you up as a middleman?
Well, I know.
Do you speak Spanish, by the way?
No.
How about Arabic? Are you a terrorist? Do you have any ID
German?
German.
Mm-hmm.
There you are. So in answer to the question, getting all kidding aside, you think there are large cartels growing marijuana in the hills? Apparently, this latest bust sounds like that the guy who's talking on the tape knows the fellow that was busted, and it's a local guy, not some huge drug cartel.
Right. It's like when the Bush quarters describe a terrorist, snatching terrorists, what you find out is that they don't have the money to even buy boots.
Who doesn't have the money to buy boots?
The alleged terrorists.
Uh-huh.
You remember that?
I don't remember that, but again, I'm thinking. Oh, again, I'm not interested in sort of rhapsodizing or musing on it. I'm wondering if you have any information on it. You probably don't. It sounds like you don't. Drug cartels and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't.
I do know that
there are lots of people I know who have access to marijuana.
Right. I mean, I know that too. The question, though, is: is a large part of the marijuana wholesaling industry in the hands of organized crime,
where
crime means people who are involved with other more sinister kinds of activities like white slavery.
No direct knowledge of any of
that. Right. Right. And then the next question is: the question I asked this person was, what about are people who are growers who make a significant amount of money off of marijuana on the black market disinclined to be helpful to legalize marijuana because it would destroy the source of their profits? He said he didn't think people he knew would be, or because he thinks that they'd find something else to do. And he regards this as sort of an enlightened a drug which helps you get enlightened and live a different way and can also make money off of it.
Yeah.
What's your feeling? I mean, are growers an impediment to legalizing marijuana in this county?
No, I don't think that's true.
And why do you say that? Have you talked to growers? Do you know about that?
Yes, I've talked to quite a number.
Have they contributed money to Proposition K, or do they want to see it legalized?
I've heard of two.
So some are contributing money to Proposition K. Okay. Not that K is going to do shit, mind you, but, you know, it's a nice idea. I mean, it's a nice notion.
As I said, I'm an optimist, and I expect it all to be legalized by the end of this century.
Burnout hippie types.
Yeah, boy.
Okay, Mr. LSD has been, wannabe, blah, blah, blah. Actually,
Peter, acid eater.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, I've spoken with people up on campus at the Kent University who knew you. You know, and they were saying, oh, here's this poor guy who's a big burnout, you know, used to be very brilliant.
And
now he's, you know, he's impoverished, tooth shy, and, you know, he's, you know, living in a slum district of Santa Cruz, goes on ridiculous, you know, radio shows that nobody listens to. I'm not going to. Present show accepted, of course. And I'm wondering, I mean, how do you, have you found there's a social stigma? You're poor. You're a poor person in Santa Cruz. That's been my impression.
Well, yes.
You don't got a lot of money, right?
No, but while working at Grey Bears, I used to get $7.50 an hour, and
that's not a lot of money.
No, and I was told that
if
the board passed it, I would get a big raise. I told all the board members as they went in, pass the budget. Anyway, it turned out I was given $13 an hour.
Take me out to dinner, man.
Twice.
My question for you is...
But I haven't
spent anymore.
Wait a minute.
This is not relevant to my question. My question is, have you... You used to have quite a social circle of friends among middle class, I might say even lower upper class circles when you were younger.
Yeah.
And are you now shunned by the people that, you know, they once embraced you because of your
because you're
poor? You get invited regularly to the homes of the rich to toast champagne and talk about psychedelic research?
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
I wouldn't either. No, I mean, you know,
but I don't feel that I'm being shunned or anything like that.
Is that because you're naive and a good fellow, or is that because you aren't really being shunned?
I think it's because I'm not really being shunned.
When's the last time a university professor interested in this issue invited you to his home to talk about it, or somebody seriously came to you and said, I want to hear about your research recently, other than people like myself who are beyond the pale?
Yeah. Well, let's see. There was one about months ago.
And what was that? What happened there?
He was extremely interested in Amanita muscaria. The
mushrooms?
Mushrooms.
Magic mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And
this is a local UCSC guy? Or?
Mm-hmm. And I had a booklet.
Did he offer you a grant, perhaps?
No.
A good meal?
Diet
Pepsi? Just a pat on the back?
We did have a good meal.
On him?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. Okay, well, we should get a meal out of it.
And I have been trying to find... I have so many papers and so many books and whatnot. I've been trying to find this little one about how you can reproduce that particular mushroom.
But my point was that you actually are still... I mean, you're not contacted...
I have my hand in.
You're not contacted by the University of California to do a lecture series on psychedelic stuff.
No.
Yet that is a subject in which you are an expert. Is that fair to say?
Well, I'm certainly very interested.
Isn't it true that you've written tens of thousands of words on this subject?
Mm-hmm.
Is it true that you have a number of books still in print on the subject?
Yes. There are
now. Why?
Five of them at the moment.
Is it because the subject is a taboo that you are not being are you invited to psychedelic conferences, for instance? And are you? Do they pay your way?
No, but I go.
Well, you sleep in the, you know, where do you sleep, outside or inside?
Generally,
Cod your room, do you?
You have
friends.
I happen to be kind of friendly person, and
I notice that.
I have a lot of friends.
Yeah.
So that I haven't had to sleep outside at all.
So people have arrested you under the sleeping ban recently in Santa Cruz.
No. In fact, I could tell you a number of stories.
Well, you no doubt could. Let's continue, however, as you finish your reading assignment and then get back to us. You're tuned to Free Radio. We're talking with Peter Stafford, author of the Psychedelic Encyclopedia. If you don't believe me, Google for Peter Stafford, S-T-A-F-F-O-R-D, and you will find he actually has written these books. And I, you know,
and
he,
I have a 175-page website.
Really?
On it, if you go to Google, just call up Psychedelics 101. It'll be the first item there, I believe.
Psychedelics 101.
Yeah.
Okay, I will put that into the notes on the show, which hopefully will be available on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, for those who wish to review this or other Bathrob Spears Broadsides shows. Again, the number here is 427-3772 if anyone wants to call in on issues of psychedelics, local human rights violations, or, I don't know, whatever the heck takes your fancy at the moment. And if I don't like it, I'll just grumble at you.
No, no.
Oh, yeah.
No.
So, actually, we're going to have a brief musical break. I've got it. And then we'll be back.
Outside the window, there's a woman being grabbed. They've dragged her to the bushes, and now she's being stabbed. Maybe we should call cops and try to stop the pain. But Monopoly is so much fun, I'd hate to blow the game. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. Riding down the highway, yes, my back is getting stiff. 13 cars are piled up, they're hanging on a cliff. Now maybe we should pull them back with our towing chain. But we gotta move and we might get sued, and it looks like it's gonna rain. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. Sweating in the ghetto with the colored and the poor. The rats have joined the babies who are sleeping on the floor. Now wouldn't it be a riot if they really blew their tops? But they got too much already, and besides we've got the cops. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. Oh, there's a dirty paper using sex to make her sales. The Supreme Court was so upset they sent him off to jail. Maybe we should help the fiend and take away his fine. But we're busy reading Playboy and the Sunday New York Times. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. Smoking marijuana is more fun than drinking beer. But a friend of ours was captured and they gave him 30 years. Maybe we should raise our voices, ask somebody why. But demonstrations are a drag, besides we're much too high. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest.
And that's Phil Oakes, of course, Small Circle of Friends. On the phone we have a caller. Hi there, caller.
Hello.
What's your name?
Kelly.
Hey, Kelly. So you're thinking I'm being a little bit snotty here with Peter.
Well, I didn't know who you were speaking to until you just said his name, and because I tuned in to you just a little late. But yeah, and I thought, oh, I know him. I mean, I know his, actually, Peter Stafford, my good friend, has had a copy of his pre-edited, thing that was in one of the, I don't know how much work he's done, apparently a lot more than I realized, but it was on MDMA.
Excellent.
And it was published in the,
yeah.
I don't know, the 90s.
I don't even have a copy of it.
Well,
but I would like to get a copy of it.
Okay, well, this is Peter talking. Well, my friend has your pre-edited copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know him. His name's Dave. Big Dave?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, anyhow, I stayed with him a long time ago when I first moved here and then became familiar with your work by way of reading that manuscript. And so, and I was always really proud because I would be like, yeah, I know. I saw the pre-edited version of this, da-da-da-da-da. And, well, who would ever know that, you know, the change of the turn of events would lead you to, I didn't know that you were living that way. I don't even know that you really are. In fact, one of my friends, I think, met you recently at a convention, one of those conventions you were just mentioning before, where you have to be invited.
Mm-hmm.
And what's his name? The P-Cow author.
Sasha Shulgin.
Yeah, Alexander Shulgin. Yeah, one of his things. One of my good friends was invited, and he ended up doing some of it. Well, I think he met you there. I'm 99.9% sure you were one of the people he met.
Oh, quite likely.
So the question that I guess you're asking that comes to my mind, Kelly, is am I being inaccurate, Peter, in describing you as impoverished? Or are you, in fact, secretly quite well-to-do and just sort of living among the masses?
No. I don't have very much in the way of expenses. Maybe I'm a beatnik or something. I don't know. But after I was given a raise, almost doubled, I found that I wasn't spending any more than I had spent before. And
I just look at that as that you're just that enlightened, where the material things in, you know, this modern world have not made.
Right. I gave up driving in 1964, for instance. Okay. That saved,
year before I was born.
That saved a lot of money.
Yep, that does save a lot of problems.
Yep. I think I lead quite a simple life, and I happen to enjoy it. I might be delusional, but I seem to have a great time, and I meet all kinds
of people.
You're
just too damn happy, Peter, I got to tell you. And obviously, I'm resentful, and I've got to find some way to put you down.
But I have a mantra for a while there. It was, it's not my fault that I'm so lucky.
There you go. Any more questions, Kelly, or comments, perhaps?
I guess no. But it's an honor to indirectly be speaking with
and
you,
I,
meeting you.
Yeah, and I go to quite a lot of these events, and everybody seems to be having a wonderful time.
I've never been, but I heard they're really informative.
Kelly, you're a local person, right?
Yes.
You know,
and I know people that give money to MAP, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies.
Yes. And that's my other friend who went to the convention thing. He's affiliated with that too.
You know, it sounds like, you know, I'm just wondering, Peter, have you considered, like, throwing some a local lecture series, just sort of...
Oh, I was thinking of doing that.
I mean...
I used to live at La Bahia, then near the beach.
Right.
I happened to live in what was the Admiral's apartment. It was built for the Navy originally. And it was large enough...
Do you have it together to do a lecture series?
Anyway, so I gave every Friday, I would give a talk.
Uh-huh.
The first one was called Wild Trips.
Right.
And
how long ago was this?
Oh, this must be about 10 or maybe 12 years ago. But that one went on till 6 in the morning.
That's a wild session.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was told this wasn't the best idea. I would cover the town with images of, say, I'd be talking about peyote, or I'd be talking about LSD, or
right.
I'd be talking about mushrooms, or... ayahuasca or ibogaine.
Right.
And I made more money charging $5 for people to come in than I did working 40 hours a week as a typesetter.
You need anybody to help promote these meetings,
let's do one on how to use psychedelics intelligently.
That sounds like a great idea.
Is there
a number you want
idea.
To give people to call in, Peter, if they want
I'm
to get
not
in touch
only
with?
In the phone book, but the number is 427-2607.
427-2607.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you might give them a call, Kelly, and work them out.
I will.
I am kind of a friendly person, I would
I think you're... and who cares if you're not? You've done a lot, so to inform and educate me.
Yeah,
oh, you know what?
I've gone to more trouble than you can imagine in certain ways, but it's been wonderful. Everybody I've met, I don't recall meeting anybody who I felt angry toward or anything of that sort.
Kelly, you had something you wanted to
say? Peter,
I like being a psychedelic groupie.
Go ahead, Kelly.
I did have a question. I actually forgot what the question was until just now. But before I forget, this 426, what was that again?
427-2607.
Mm-hmm.
That's Peter Stafford's number.
427-2607. Question was, is in that manuscript that you wrote, the pre-edited thing that I read anyhow that was then to be published in whichever edition, the fifth edition of Psychedelics Encyclopedia on MDMA, are those accounts of those people, those individuals? Because there was a time when I was enlightening, educating folks on different things, you know, just personally or whatever, and I found, you know, like the propaganda of anything that the media wants to put out, that, and then of course it would be years later, like last year, that it would be horribly propagated in a negative way, MDMA anyway. However, the things that I found in your manuscript, some of the interviews of the folks, were any of those embellished? Because they were almost like...
No,
they were all...
I actually don't have a copy of that manuscript.
Well, I will get you your copy back. How about that? I will
isn't that
call
terrific?
My friend and...
But there are people who... one of the most extraordinary was this fellow who was completely shell-shocked. And... he had been living an almost impossible life, hardly able to sleep, terrified by all of these demons. And then after he took MDMA, he suddenly found that his whole life was completely changed, and that people were friendly, and that he had a circle of associates that liked him, and that also he didn't have the fears and the torments that had bothered him for like 40 years.
Well, did you mention earlier, or before I tuned in, that how they recently, the FDA, I think it's the FDA.
No, we haven't talked about that, but there have been.
You recently approved.
Uh huh.
MDMA research for post-traumatic stress.
Mm-hmm. And there is the beginning of more research in this area. There was a psilocybin study, for instance, just recently, in which people talked about how they'd had all these mystical experiences.
Right.
Is there an event coming up that either of you know about where, you know, that's local, or I guess your event will be next, Peter. You and the two of you are going to work together to get a local event
that's
happening.
Right. Yeah. We'll get something over at Loudon Nelson or something like that.
Okay.
Hey,
that'd be wonderful.
Again, Peter's number for those, for you again, Kelly, I'm sure you have it already, but for others is...
My landlord's going to be unhappy about this.
427-2607. Mm-hmm. And if your landlord hangs up on you, mm-hmm. call the Huff line at 423-4833.
Okay, and Peter, I will, if you don't already know Dave's whereabouts or number or whatever, he's in the same place he's been forever and a day,
uh-huh.
and he has a copy of that, and I will... network to him and
okay, terrific.
Okay,
you know what I do? I get involved in something and then sort of halfway along, I realize what it is I'm doing and I go and finish it. And before I get around to somehow pushing it into printing press, I'm on to the next thing.
Sounds like
that's what happened in that particular case.
Anything else?
Oh, well, you finished it.
I did.
Was complete.
Yeah. But I didn't. Get it through the...
you didn't keep your own copy.
I didn't get it through the press.
Oh, okay. I even think he had two copies, so I don't know how he had two. Maybe he made a copy, but whatever. But it's all good. You know, it's in good hands, and of course...
terrific. I'd like to read it.
Okay.
Thanks,
yeah,
Kelly.
It's got penciled highlights and things that were crossed out and corrected. It's really neat.
Sounds great. All right. Again, we'll be
very
expecting...
Very nice talking with you.
Hey.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Kelly. And 427, actually the number here is 427-3772, and the number off air to get a hold of Peter if you want more information about the forthcoming around the clock psychedelic exposition at Loudon Nelson. It'll be at, you can call him at 427-2607.
And we'll try to keep it till 2 in the morning.
Or whenever. Yes, indeed.
But people just love to talk about some of these experiences because they're so impressive to them.
And indeed, if anybody wants to call in and talk, feel free to do
so. And so that sometimes these gatherings go on and on right into the night.
Now we're going to go on with a little more street interviews, and then if we have time, we may not even get to it today, Rolling Stone's article. You can actually read Rolling Stone's article. What you have to say is probably more pertinent and more local, and I appreciate hearing that. And here's a little more local babble from the streets, actually from yesterday.
I have some experience with DMT, but we're all waiting for ayahuasca to hit in a big way here. DMT, well, when you're taking DMT, it's much different than LSD. LSD is unfriendly enough if you're in the wrong situation, wrong setting. You don't see people just the people who are doing a lot of LSD are, you know, that could be viewed as medicine too. Most people I know will take LSD as kind of a medicine, or they're trying to trip out and it's a vacation. They hardly ever do it, you know, every week or every month. Most people I know take it, you know, on a semi-regular basis. But the new thing, yeah, DMT, it's just new. Well, it's been around for a long time. I tried it a couple times last year. I did
probation officer, take note.
I did it two or three times in a row, and on the third time, that spirit of the DMT or the nature spirit really came and told me, this is not to be played with. This is not a party drug. And I put it right up on my altar, and I didn't really touch it again, but people came to my house. I'd turn them on to it because it's really a beautiful mind-opening. It really puts us in touch with the deity, that we are all part of the God, all part of the One, the oneness of the universe. It's a really beautiful drug.
DMT is an active ingredient in ayahuasca. Yes,
yes it is.
Ayahuasca is not illegal in this country.
Really? It's not? I didn't know
that.
Well,
there's a court decision, a battle going on now about importing ayahuasca as a religious sacrament. And you are speaking, I presume, about using it as, well, I don't presume anything. I won't query you.
Thank you for that
those series of insights. And it's about 5:30 here, and the folks are jumping and wriggling and rolling, and looks like the crowd has grown to about 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, maybe 70 people. Got some Latino folks leaning against their vehicles and watching with some satisfaction. A lot of old-time activists. Dog walkers. Secret meeting at the tree with the man with a feather in his head. Your name, sir?
Phineas B. Forrest.
And Phineas, or Mr. Forrest, as some have called you, you've been observing the downtown for the last couple of weeks. Any comments?
Blood for oil.
Kind of the slogan of the last 3 or 4 years among trendy lefties. I think they understand why we are in Iraq. Little do they know. How are the police treating you there, Forrest?
Everybody's behaving.
Really? So would you say the police have backed down on the crackdown?
No, they're still getting those donuts as they travel around. Getting those donuts.
Hepped up, eh? Well, any other comments before?
Donut.
To coin a phrase, yes. Well, thank you. Have you been...
Although we did learn that there was no gang-related task force, although rumor is there are still a few gangsters in the town.
Some say that they run the town, but that's just a rumor. Talking with...
Santa Cruz. Oh, Megan.
And Megan, you're wandering about with this rather impressive-looking Sony PD-10X DV cam doing a documentary. Is it a class project? Is this your own creation?
This is actually... It's for an organization called Space Collective. Very interesting internet organization. Will come online relatively soon. And if you can get access to a computer and the internet, you can check it out. It'll be really interesting.
How long will your documentary
the world you know, one step at a time. So
one photo at a time.
Yeah, right. Well, you know what? This is how many? 42 frames per second. So that's a lot of photos at a time that we're
42 frames per second at a time.
Yeah. So we are actually changing the world at a rapid rate.
Is this your first documentary?
No. I've done another documentary.
What other ones have you done?
Well, one which is concerned with social networking communities online, very much based.
Here in Santa Cruz?
I was a student at UC Santa Cruz, yeah. I've recently.
You've learned better, now you're not a student.
Learned better in what respect?
Well, I mean, you're not making money off the documentary.
Oh, no.
You're self-supporting in some way.
Yes, this is true.
And we have a phone call here. Hey there, Olympia, what's up?
Howdy, this is DJ Rhino from Free Radio Olympia.
You're actually calling long distance to Free Radio Santa Cruz?
You better believe it. Y'all are worth the money.
And this is Olympia, Washington, where the land of the free or the land of the FCC? What's happening up there?
Well, it's been a long time since we've had to deal with the FCC down here, but we like to consider ourselves the land of the free here in Wild Cascadia.
In Seattle, you've recently had a tax and regulate measure passed a couple years ago. Have you been to Seattle to see how that worked out with the marijuana?
As far as I know, I mean, I've certainly smoked my fair share of marijuana down in Seattle, and I've never been hassled. I've never really made a big deal of it, though, so it hasn't been a problem for me.
And in Olympia, how are the Olympia police treating you drugs?
The Olympia police, they're fucking assholes. We refer to them as mollos because they're, well...
As what?
Well, they're all soft inside, as it turns out. And, yeah, there's, they really, you know, the majority of the population they crack down are the transient folks, the folks who don't really have a home. And that's obviously, you know, the most... it's obviously the most difficult for folks like that.
Well, I know in Seattle there's a newspaper, was it Real Change or...
Yeah, Real Change.
Which is, you know, publicizes the police abuses and supports the rights of homeless people. Is there much sort of counteraction like food not bombs, feeding homeless people, and things like that? Or?
Yeah, well, I don't know what's going on in Seattle, really. I'll be up there this weekend for the Northwest Radio Conference, as I understand the V-Man will be as well.
That's what I hear. Yeah.
And down here in Olympia, we have the Voice of Olympia. And that is kind of a chronicle of what's going on with the homeless scene down here. And we in Olympia, we have Food Not Bombs going on twice a week on Wednesdays and Sundays. And there's a great crew that cooks out of Media Island, which has helped get the indie media movement off the ground. And they're at mediaisland.org.
Isn't Olympia the place where you guys actually, along with other folks from SDS, you know, protested a Navy ship that was heading for Iraq or some sort of thing?
Yeah, it was an Army ship. What is it? Well, a striker brigade recently came through, and these big-ass striker vehicles, which are actually, you know, by military standards, really poorly equipped to go out, let alone, you know, by standards of... Well, I mean, by anybody's common sense, you know, there's the question of why are we really there? And obviously they shouldn't be there, you know. They were shipping out through the port of Olympia, and we saw about around 100 of these striker vehicles head out on a boat along with numerous supplies to fund the striker brigade. And, yeah,
you were a part of this protest? Or?
Yeah, I was definitely part of this protest.
It went on for several weeks, right?
It did go on for several weeks. Really, it was more like a week and a half. It started out, the striker brigade started coming in, and immediately we were like, well, we got to fucking do something. And immediately we were on the scene. The first day, strikers were coming in. There was one arrest. And then the next day...
Let me understand what they were doing. They were trying to ship out vehicles from Olympia, Washington, the port, out to Iraq, right?
Yeah, that's right. The vehicles traveled down I-5. From Fort Lewis, which is right near Tacoma, and Tacoma's in between Seattle and Olympia. So we were doing all we could to slow down, stop, halt, whatever we could to impede the progress of the strikers making it to Iraq.
And were you successful in slowing it down? I know you were successful in getting some of that into the papers.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, it was a big operation we were up against, and one day we had a dozen people stand out in front of the Stryker Brigade, and all of them were holding hands, creating a human blockade against the Stryker blockades, and held up one of the convoys that came down from Fort Lewis for over half an hour, and then everybody was arrested. And this,
anybody convicted or not?
Currently, we're in the middle of a court hearing. The direct action that took place later on, once the boat was in the harbor, because for a while they were just loading Stryker vehicles into the port, and then eventually a boat came in and the Stryker vehicles were loaded onto the port, or the boat. And while the Stryker vehicles were loaded onto the boat, a group took down the fence, the front gate of the Port of Olympia, and entered inside and were immediately blocked by the police, so they laid down inside. And all of these people were arrested. Since then, in court, anything leading up to that has been dismissed. So anybody who was involved with the blockade or standing in front of the Stryker brigades alone or with others, their cases have been dismissed. But this 22 people were arrested, the Olympia 22, and they are currently in court contesting the charges that have been put up against them. And it's been a real gross case. The prosecution just really mishandling the case, the police deleting evidence, and the prosecution obviously being favored by the judge.
How can people get more information about this case? Is there a website?
Yeah, there definitely is. You can visit omjp.org, which is the Olympia Movement for Justice and Peace.
Omjp.org. Omjp.org.
OMJP.org.
Okay.
And you can also email OMGP, there will be emails available on the website if you are looking for more information or to make contact.
And then, of course, there's this conference coming up. You say, is it this weekend or next weekend?
It's this weekend. The Northwest Radio Conference is coming up. The 15th to the 17th, and I understand the V-Man's headed down this way.
Now, is that going to be broadcast live on your local free radio station, Free Radio Olympia, or?
No, it won't be broadcast live. It's going to be, there's a new network being set up amongst the Northwest Radio folks, all the way from Canada down to Oregon into Iowa. There's going to be folks working on a network where we can share content and create and share more regional and locally applicable news content.
Mm-hmm. I may ask this question of Stephen Dunifer when he was in the studio. You know Stephen Dunifer, Berkeley guy, who's done a lot of work on free radio and actually was a kind of a seminal person who began composing or putting together free radio transmitters.
I'm aware of Stephen Dunifer. Not too familiar, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, I asked him this question. I wonder what your response would be. You've been in free radio for a couple of years, or
A little over a year, yeah.
I mean, what's the story in terms of the expansion or contraction of free radio? Maybe you don't have a historical perspective because you're recently in it, but there seems to be less free radio now than there was like 5 or 10 years ago, or 5 or 7 or 8 years ago. And
mm-hmm.
And if so, I'm wondering, is that because of the Internet? Is that what's happening up in Olympia? What's any sense of that?
You know, I'm curious about this myself because locally, you know, we have Seattle, which isn't too far away, as well as Tacoma, which is much larger than Olympia. And you'd think that with the population of these areas, you'd have free radio stations moving. And it's unfortunate that there's nothing going on, but as I understand right now, well, recently in Olympia we got a second free radio station, you know, just a station broadcasting at 87.7 without a license, playing nothing but music, completely apolitical, but totally following in the free-form, free radio style. And that's been exciting here in Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I understand that there's a group in Portland that's putting together a free radio station. And recently, if a free radio station was busted, well, received a note from the FCC and kind of freaked out and went off the air in Portland. But now there's a group getting together to get that back on the air and make it a more political and active station.
Okay. Well, I take it, can people, do you stream as well as broadcast up there at Free Radio Olympia? Or?
Yeah, currently our web stream's down, but it will be on the air very soon. You can definitely check out our website, which is frolympia.org.
frolympia.org.
Yep.
And what's your name?
For freeradioolympia.org, frolympia.org.
Gotcha. And your name is?
And I'm DJ Rhino.
Hey, DJ Rhino. Anything more you want to tell the local folks down here and who are listening? Or?
Well, I just, keep it up, Keep listening and supporting community radio and direct action in the community.
Any psychedelic advances up there? We have Peter Stafford here. I don't know if you've been listening to the station, but we've been...
Yeah, actually, I do have a question.
Go for it.
I'm a little curious about any recent information that may have come out about the phenethylamines. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, phenethylamines.
What is this we're talking about? Give it to skin. What's it called?
Phenethylamines.
Phenethylamine, okay.
They are related to mescaline.
And, recently TCI and TCB have become fairly popular mm-hmm. in Olympia. And I'm wondering if you can share any information about those particular drugs.
Well, I like them and I vote.
What kind of information are you interested in, DJ Rhino? Any specific questions? Toxicity?
Possibly if any studies or information has come out about the long-term effects of these drugs, and also just some experiences that you can share with us, maybe personal or within the circles of the area you're in.
Well, there are a very large number of drugs that are related to mescaline that have psychoactive components about it with greater, with different tonalities, I guess you could say. They are liked by many. Some people don't like them, but that is also the sort of thing that happens with speed. They're kind of psychedelic speed, you could say, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like related to amphetamines.
Mm-hmm.
And any toxic, any negative effects, any particularly positive? Have you had positive experiences with this yourself?
Oh, yeah, I happen to be very responsive to psychoactive drug use.
Any contraindications for taking it or any advice you have for people taking it?
Well, you know, you don't have to overdo it. I think on the whole, you see, these drugs are not dangerous in the usual senses of danger. They affect your mind and can affect your body a great deal, too. You can change your whole way of relating to your own body.
But you, in a positive way rather than a negative way, or should we be worried about...
Yeah, I would say generally positive, yes. People are very often very surprised.
Any more specific? I mean, it's pretty vague. One could say this about any psychedelic drugs. I mean, do you have any particular, any memories you have of what happened when you last took this? Were you a sexual dynamo? Did you
climbed a mountain and swam in a lagoon and had just a absolutely wonderful day.
Sounds like a nice time. What do you say, DJ Rhino? I don't know if that helps. I'm getting into time pressure here, but
that was certainly the experiences I've had, sexual dynamo and whatnot.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah, definitely delightful.
I'm particularly interested in sex, politics, and psychedelics.
That could be the your show, DJ Rhino, you're going to be doing on sort of on your off hours when you're not working at the conference, right?
And I'm going to throw in rock and roll to that title as well.
Rock and roll. Let's get cliche, shall we?
Hey,
thanks. I'm going to roll on you. If you want, you can call again. Maybe leave a message on the Free Radio voicemail. For those who are interested, if you want more information about Free Radio, that number is 427-4523, and you can leave a message there, and everybody on the collective who tunes into the voicemail will be able to hear about it.
and delightful. And of course, y'all down there in Santa Cruz are welcome to call us at 360-705-9780 up here in freeradioolympia.org.
860-970-9705. Fair enough. All right. Thanks a lot, DJ Rhino, and, you know, charge on.
Yeah, well, thank you for rocking out down there in Freak Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey, hey.
And ciao.
All righty. Bye-bye. Back to these three interviews. Hope we can get in a few of these before we leave. Peter, you're invited to come back on Sunday if you're bored. The show returns at 9:30 on Sunday morning, and we can grill you some more anytime.
Okay, sure.
We could talk more about this, that, and the other. I want to get some of these interviews in because there's a demonstration tomorrow that I think people need to know about, and there's a little discussion of that in these interviews that follow.
You want to tell us about it?
Well, here we go.
Working with some good people, so. Okay. All right.
And so people can go to, again, the website to view this. Will be
spacecollective.com. Yeah. Yeah. So check it out. It's going to change the world.
And if you want to hear yourself changing the world, you can go to Free Radio or freakradio.org.
All right.
Which I'm searching for a business card here. There you go.
Okay.
And there you have it.
Awesome.
Thanks, Megan. I'm here at the farmer's market about 10 to 6, having moved away from the raucous Food Not Bomsky dancers, talking with a more sedate socialist action person, or socialist worker, actually. That's the publication you're giving out.
Hi, I'm Devin Koki. I'm right now we're organized. I'm part of International Socialist Organization and the Santa Cruz Anti-Imperialist League. And right now 107 people have been deported in Santa Cruz County, and half of them, or 107 people have been arrested, and half of them have been deported already.
Let me ask you a question about this, because I read the story in the Sentinel, and I've seen the story, some more extensive coverage, in the Watsonville Pajaronian. But do you know if the local police agencies were involved in this as well as federal agents?
I'm not sure about which police agencies were involved. I know that it's a federal operation that's going on. It's called Operation Return to Sender, which is really racist and mean, and that's just like, is that like just
treating people like old dead letters?
Yeah, exactly. It's really bad. We're having an action on Friday at 5.
That'll be actually, since I play this tomorrow, it'll be Friday the 15th.
Yeah, Friday the 15th at 5 to 7 in front of the county building at Ocean and Water. We're just trying to raise awareness because I was just at this COPA event. I don't know what like the acronym stands for, but the religious leaders just had a press conference denouncing
this action by the immigration.
Denouncing this action by the immigration. But COPA itself is working with Sam Farr, the local Democrat.
Sell out Democratic hack.
Yeah, and just selling out to the Democrats is not the way to do it. We believe in direct, concrete actions to stop it, because that's what stopped. That's what stopped the Sensenbrenner bill, is all the people on the street saying, no, Congressman, don't do this.
That
we don't
was the bill to make it a felony to be in the country without your papers.
Yeah, exactly. And so I see this as a direct intimidation by them, because they're threatened by the mass actions. Because we had, on May 1st, there's 20,000 people in this county, 10,000 in Wattsville, 10,000 here.
Where did they all go, is what I want to know.
Kind
of evaporated over the summer, just like the huge demonstration of February 2003 that had 3,000 to 7,000 anti-war protesters who just all went home after the war started.
Well, it's kind of like with a lot of movement building. There's a lot of periods where they have to reevaluate where they are, and they do decline in number, but then they still come back, because a lot of movements have big waves of it. And I think
you're such a philosopher.
But I think they're in just one of their down periods, and pretty soon, especially with this, I think there might be a backlash, and hopefully there will be on Friday, against all these deportations.
and the time for this this huge mass of tens of thousands of people who will get together.
Yeah, exactly. I want to see over 10,000 people there.
When will it be again?
September 15th, this Friday at 5 p.m. Or 5 to 7 at Ocean and Water at the County Building.
Bring your guitars, perhaps?
Yeah, if you want to.
Are joints allowed?
I don't know. You know, that.
Checking out your
that's illegal.
No, we don't want to be illegal. We don't want to be one of the illegals, after
all.
Yeah,
we don't want to be illegal people.
And how can people get more information about the group you're working with so that we can have you investigated properly?
Well, we have a website. We're the Santa Cruz Anti-Imperialist League. I'm not sure the exact email
address. If you Google for it, you should be able to get it.
Yeah, you should be able to find it.
And we've been talking with?
Devin Cohey.
Devin, thank you. Any final words for the masses out there?
Just make sure and show up. And in the elections, don't vote Democrat, because that's just selling out.
Thanks, Devin. We're talking with...
Paul Sancho-Tanonga.
And you're also working with Socialist Worker, trying to get people to come to this rally in 2 days, September 15th, in front of the County Building.
Yes.
But you also have had some experience with politicians in town, notably one council member, Michael Rotkin.
Yes.
And give me your analysis of Mr. Rotkin, unless you are still under his, shall we say, direction at college, or?
Well, yeah, I'm certainly under his direction, and, you know, hopefully I get, TA's class again, Isher Marxism, but, you know, I think, you know, the major disagreement and one of the biggest ploys why I think it's so many terrible policies is because of the fact that he actually thinks that there's a shred of hope in actually organizing with the Democratic Party. Because the Democratic Party has never, ever been the party of the workers, has never been the party of Afro-Americans, has never been the party of women.
Are you
saying
that the party of Strom Thurmond is not the party of the workers?
Well, what's Strom Thurmond, like pre-1960s or Strom Thurmond?
I don't know if there was that much change. I guess there was. Everybody kind of went through a change.
Well, I mean, you know, he's Republican now, right? So,
good point.
Yeah, the Democratic Party started off as the pro-slavery party and pretty much was the party that destroyed Reconstruction efforts. And, you know, that hasn't really changed up until today. They're the pro-war party. They have always...
Have you told Mike Rotkin your thoughts on this matter?
Yeah, but he dismisses it. And, you know... Which is his right to, I suppose. So.
What about his local activity? When these larger ideological issues kind of go on, but what about do you have any sense of his local program? He is running for re-election. Would you be voting for Councilman Mike?
No, I will not. I will not be voting for Councilman.
Why not? What do you have against him? Are you just your resentment about your good teacher?
Oh no, it's not resentment. It's, you know, deep political disagreements. I can work with people and disagree with them, and so, you know, because of the blanket ban and the sleeping ban, you know, the anti-homeless bills that he's passed, and also the fact that he, you know, publicly denounced the bus worker strike, and if he's really a socialist, he should be for working class solidarity.
We need a sound tax base in town, don't you know?
Yeah, well, we also need open borders, we also need, you know, living wage. You know, I mean, I think one of the problems with Mike is that, you know, in his quest for world revolution, he got too caught up in city council politics. And unfortunately, you know, because he's not part of we can talk about, like, Leninism and being part of, like, our parties and all this other stuff. But primarily it's to support the Democrats.
You're clearly a red traitor who shouldn't even be talked with any further. We've been talking with...
Alessandro Tanaga, the red traitor.
Yes. Yeah. And thank you, Mr. RT. Any other comments before we take off?
Just like to say, you should, you know, people, radicals in the city have a really good heart, and everyone should campaign for revolution. But when it comes to elections, we really shouldn't just ignore the elections. We really do need to see how people actually think that they're actually winning through elections, or are actually going to make gains or reforms through elections. And I think people really do need to take a stand against the Democratic Party. And, you know, if... You know,
who's your candidate for city council? Are you registered in the city of Santa Cruz?
I am registered. I haven't looked at the candidates, but I'm more concerned with Todd Creation, who's running on the Green Party ticket for Senate, and also Pierre Camino is running for the Green Party ticket for governor.
Ignoring our local politics again, Mr. Socialist Worker Guy?
Not ignoring, just haven't been investigating it quite yet.
All right, well, I'll be hoping next week you'll have a full report.
Full report. Maybe not by next week, but very, very soon.
Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Here to talk to?
Okay, before we go any further, let's introduce Kim Rinker, the man, one of the men behind the group that is pressing for the Proposition K tax and regulate, opposed by all vigilant police officers in Santa Cruz, or at least Lieutenant Merced Vice Chief Patty Cipone. And I see that you're munching away.
That's a personal opinion. You're right.
I believe she's putting that on the. She's on the ballot against it. So we should know that you vote in favor of this measure, you're voting against a high and well-esteemed police official. But you have some.
Isn't it great how they got all the authority figures? You know, your school principal.
Has Peter Stafford come out against this yet?
Is he an authority figure?
No, I regard him as an authority on psychedelics.
Well, he's probably in favor of it then.
He probably is, yes. So you say there are numerous other organizations that have signed on to the Santa Cruzans for, for sensible marijuana policy?
Indeed.
And who are these groups so that we can disassociate ourselves from them?
So we got both a couple of Democratic clubs. I don't know their official names. But the real coup recently was the California Nurses Association.
Were you at that meeting when that decision was made?
No, I just got an email about it.
Okay, now what about the Santa Cruz Chamber of Commerce and the Seaside Company?
Not sure if we've gone after them yet. No, you should talk to us, Kate Horner.
Who is Kate Horner, and where does she come from?
She's the new campaign manager.
Does she have an office down here?
Not yet. Looking for one.
You know, there's this big building over there where the ACLU has a drug policy, takes over the entire third floor, or much of it, of this building at Cathcart and Pacific. Has the ACLU drug policy weighed in favor of the local initiative? And if not, why the fuck not? Forgive me for being so emphatic.
A couple of their people have been unofficially advised on portions of it, yes.
That's sort of mishmash for we told them, but they haven't said shit.
I don't know if there's an official recommendation yet.
Right, nothing official. So you've mentioned three organizations that are.
So Kate. She's the one who's.
I haven't got Kate's number. I don't know where she is. You can talk to Kate and tell her to call my show or call me. There's all kinds of people wandering around this place. Where are your five women?
Compassion Flower.
Down to four.
Oh, okay. Right. Down to four.
There Andrea, whatever number.
Polyamory has its cost. All right, so hopefully you'll be able to advise Andrea, the Compassion Flower Inn, who is also one of the main people behind this group. And
she's probably in the phone book, too.
And I believe she's at 466-0420. That's Andrea Tischler. You may either want to spend your way into debt by spending one night in her place.
No.
Or you...
Closed.
It's closed. What's this about?
Yeah, they're moving to Hawaii.
Getting out of town, eh?
If somebody wants that, they may lease it. So if anyone wants a key location, you know, it would be good for opening a hash bar when that kind of thing is legal.
It sounds like something right up your line there, Rinker.
If I only had the money.
All right, well, I'm going to leave you and your peanut butter and honey sandwich or whatever it is.
Applesauce, actually.
Applesauce. Wow, very interesting. Any final words of support or predictions about the success of this largely meaningless but still hotly spent upon measure?
Well, I heard Greg Palast on KUSP the other day. I think you can probably get it archived at their website. But, I think it was on Talk of the Bay. He was saying that the only safe way to vote anymore is not absentee ballots, but voting early. That you can vote up to 2 weeks early, going down to the registrar's office, I believe.
This has nothing whatsoever. I guess you want people to vote on Proposition K early. Does that suggest you think there'll be some flim-flam at the box office, or I should say the ballot box?
Well, I'm not sure exactly. I haven't checked into exactly if there are any Diebold electronic voting machines. Apparently the... absentee ballots, which I had heard before, was everyone was being encouraged to vote absentee instead of the computer machines. The advice now is
keeping us up to date.
Is voting early instead of
vote early and often, as I guess.
Yeah, the absentee ballots get thrown out.
Right.
A lot of
military people overseas had their, who are African American especially, had their ballots.
Just a coincidence. Are you not suggesting racism played a factor here? If I look at the fair treatment the people in the Hurricane Katrina got, try to show a little patriotism, will you please?
As who is the guy that said George Bush doesn't care about black people?
I don't know, but that man obviously just hasn't talked to George lately. Thank you, Tim Rinker, for your assistance on this issue.
That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Coming up next, it's Uncle Dennis from the Cream to the Dregs. You've been listening to me and to Peter Stafford, who's been very patient. And he's, I think, maybe wandering in again on Sunday when we come back at 9:30 in the morning for all you early birds. You can go till 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You can also contact Peter off-air at his landlord's phone number, 427, what is it, 427-2607. If you want to reach me off-air, if you want to be on the air to denounce me, or if you got some interesting information to share with the community, the number to call is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Just a late-breaking flash. It looks like my endlessly delayed disrupting a city council trial, for which I face a year and a quarter in jail, potentially, if I don't take probation, if I'm convicted, has again been delayed. This time we didn't do it. The prosecution is asking for a continuance, which they will get an automatic granting of because one of their chief witnesses will not be in town. So for all you folks who are want to be helpful with this with me around this issue, I appreciate it, but we're going into delay mode, so you're stuck with me for another 6 months or 4 months or whatever. And hopefully I'll talk to you again on Sunday, so tune in then. Here's a little Phil Oakes. That's part of the 60s, so maybe while Uncle Dennis sets up, Phil will do some singing.
That's too folky.
Hey, man, folk is good.
Folk,
ooh, mama.
I don't know, but it seems that every single dream is painting pretty pictures in the air. Then it tumbles in despair, and it starts to bend, and by the end it's a nightmare. But I'm gonna give all that I've got to give. Cross my heart and a hope to live. I don't know, but I find the speedy hands of time are wailing out a warning on the wall. But nobody heeds the call, and the soldier obeys while the parson prays for his downfall. But I'm gonna give all that I've got to give. Cross my heart and I hope to live. I don't know, but it's true, so many things you do please you so they leave you feeling warm. It's the calm before the storm, or the habit grows, and before you know it, you're deformed. But I'm gonna give all that I've got to give. Cross my heart and I hope to live. I don't know, but I feel the safety isn't real with everybody acting all the same. For the rules will ruin the game. So I go my way laughing while they say that I'm insane. Yes, I'm gonna give all that I've got to give. Cross my heart and I hope to live. I don't know, but the treasures you contain. But the bridge is bound to break, and you reach the end screaming, it's all been a mistake. But I'm gonna give all that I've got to give. Cross my heart and I hope to live. I don't know, but it seems that every single dream is painting pretty pictures in the air. Then it tumbles in despair, and it starts to bend, and by the end it's a nightmare. Heart, and I hope to live.
Let's see, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. I want to thank Robert for another fine show, and he'll be back on Sunday at some god-awfully hour, like 9:30 in the morning or something like that, right after the wake-up call. So, I guess you want your Phil Oakes back.
Yes, sir.
Some folkin' music.
Yes, sir.
For the folkin' people. Mm-hmm. The folkin' folk. Anyway, I'm Uncle Dennis. I'm in here till 11 o'clock tonight. We are going to play rock and roll from the 60s and 70s. And you know where you can flush that folk music. Anyway, I am a folk singer, but anyway.
The blind man stood on the way and cried. Blind man stood on the way and cried. Blind man stood on the way and cried, crying, oh, show me the way.
Gentlemen and one great, great brewer, Big Brother, holding your hand.